Welcome to the podcast from Cambridge University Medical Education Group, or CUMEG for short. This is a podcast from the University of Cambridge School of Clinical Medicine, focusing on medical education. We'll be touching on a range of topics that medical educators are dealing with. I'm your host, Cheryl France, head of CUMEG. Today, I'd like to introduce Alison Martin. Alison is head of the undergraduate medical education section at the University of Cambridge School of Clinical Medicine. And I'd just like to say welcome. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
It's brilliant to have you here today. Alison, your role is quite varied. I'd love for you to just give us an introduction to who you are and your role.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much for having me. So I'm Alison Martin. I've been head of undergraduate education section for nearly 9 years now.
Wow.
Having joined the university after working in student services in the Open University for 22 years. So bringing to this role experience of operations, which is largely what the role is delivering the operations of the curriculum and the assessment for medical students in the university. So.
Okay, so that sounds quite varied.
Yes, it is. Yes, very varied. Very varied.
Yeah, okay. So I think, I've known you since I've joined and you've been brilliant to work with. And every time I hear about, oh, yes, that's under Alison, I think, gosh, Alison has a lot on her plate. So I would love to hear more about the complexities of keeping a medical school running. So if I'm correct in understanding, you've got lots of different hats on in terms of thinking about scheduling the students, not just their coursework, but their placements at the hospitals, to the assessments, to working with the sub-deans, to, I know I'm missing things, communications, how that works. So I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, no, very happy to share it. My role particularly looks after the clinical years. So at Cambridge, a standard medical degree takes 6 years. 3 of those years are done mainly in the School of Biological Sciences. It's called the preclinical years, and it's mainly knowledge-based, whereas the 3 years that I look after, the clinical years, are practical-based, and it's about placements combined with teaching. So it's a big transition for students going from the preclinical, which is a lot of book work, a lot of exams, to clinical, which is practical, using a whole different range of skills. And so within the clinical years, we deliver a lot of face-to-face teaching. There are weeks when the students all come together. So there's 3 years, and each year group has teaching in the clinical school 1 week out of every 6 or 8 weeks. And the rest of the time they're on placements in regional hospitals and Cambridge-based hospitals. So we work with 7 different hospital trusts based across the east of England, and each year group rotates through placements in each of those trusts.
And so not a small task.
No, not a small task, a huge task.
Yes.
And we have someone whose role is dedicated to actually doing that scheduling across all 3 years.
And I think it's important to remind everybody how many students we have a year as well, because it's a lot.
So there's approximately 300 students in each year.
Yeah.
Give or take. So about 900 students overall. And we have a standard course, which, as I mentioned, is 6 years long, but there's also the graduate course, which is 4 years long. And students coming into that course already have a prior degree in something else. And then they do a combination of two of the preclinical years and 2 of the clinical years, kind of an accelerated version in some ways, but they have much longer terms. It's quite an intense course. And then we also have some students who do an MBPhD route through. So after year 4, they take time out to do research, up to a couple of years to do a PhD, and then they come back in and do the final 2 years of the course and graduate with an MBPhD. So there's a few different routes through, but most of the 900 are doing the standard course.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so your role is responsible for helping to ensure that everybody's organized.
Yeah, yeah.
Within these different facets of the training scheme.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we have a number of different teams that I oversee. So there's a curriculum team made up of an administrator for each year of the course, plus a couple of additional people who do other aspects of the course. And their main job is to deliver the curriculum, make sure the curriculum is delivered, and they look after each year group of students with any queries they have. And then we have an assessment team who are dedicated to looking after the delivery of our assessments, and each year group has assessments at the end of every year. And that's they do a written exam, which is now actually an online written exam, and they do clinical exams. So that involves a whole other team of people who come together to run 2 weeks where students are going through practical stations with an examiner for each and a role player or a patient within each, called OSCEs, objective structured clinical examinations. And there's also another exam which is purely about their communication skills, which is there's a huge emphasis on communication skills teaching and training within the Cambridge degree. So at the end of every year, each year group has this complex series of exams. So that's looked after by the assessment team. We also have a team who purely look after communication skills and themes within the course, which I just mentioned. So a group of administrators there who liaise very closely with the clinical leads for each area to determine exactly what they want included in the curriculum. And then we translate that into delivered actual teaching sessions.
And I guess they also look after, because we have had some discussions about communication skills and how important that is. And then you have actors that come in.
Yes.
So it's about coordinating that as well. Yeah. Okay.
No, we have role players who come in as part of that teaching regularly. Students are in, it's done as small group teaching, and students have the option of being filmed during that teaching. So they can actually, as a group, then review and give feedback to their peers, learn from watching themselves delivering, for example, breaking bad news, that kind of training to ensure they're doing that as well as possible.
Okay.
And then that's examined as well, as they say. So there is another team that I oversee who look after a kind of more sort of supportive functions within the school. For example, there's a small welfare team. There's a colleague who looks after quality assurance, which involves visits to all of the regional trusts regularly. There's another colleague who looks after delivering events like our declaration ceremony and away days, where we give clinicians a chance to all come together and reflect on how things are going, hear about new initiatives, talk about what we might want to include in the curriculum going forward.
So you did talk about away days and that's part of the function as well. We have spoken about staff development in the past and how important that is. Mm. So I know you mentioned away days, but I believe you're also responsible for some of the junior doctors training and making sure that that aspect of kind of bringing up our next generation of individuals that will be teaching on the course and things like that and their training. Do you want to expand on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So within that same deanery team, there is one colleague who oversees staff development for clinicians, and that takes the form of a few different things, but one of them is IFME, the Integrated Foundation of Medical Education qualification that many of our teachers who teach across all the regional trusts and within the local hospitals in Cambridge undertake that qualification, and that's a route into other higher education qualifications for clinicians.
And that one's really important. So we, as part of QMEG, we have something very similar that is about helping other organizations to get that training, because it's that foundation in medical education and making sure that you've got that springboard if this is an option that you want to do in future. And I think it's important to recognize that so many of our clinicians will have been through that to ensure that you've got that rooting.
Absolutely. And some consistency, I think, across the background they've had and the training they've had. And another route through to that is we provide undergraduate clinical supervisors for all of our students who they meet regularly with in small groups during the course. And often those supervisors are junior doctors who might also be thinking, is medical education something I want to go into? And they might then pursue that through and then eventually take these other qualifications. So it's kind of a huge pool of people who are involved in educating our medical students. And it's good to know there's that huge pool out there, that consistency, that support that's available. That's another big part of what the deanery team does.
Yeah, and that's really important, isn't it, to just make sure we've got that consistency. Another thing you picked up on was you have a team that looks after welfare. Now, I know that this has been a massive issue, not just in Cambridge, but worldwide.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Since COVID, we've seen a lot more students who have different needs in terms of wanting to have some lectures online or to be able to review lectures. So that's been something additional, as well as having students who are not coming to lectures, which has been really problematic. How has your team had to deal with that in a new way?
So I think since the pandemic, particularly attendance has been a key issue. And in some cases, that's linked to, I guess, mental health of students, but also physical health of students. And I think also different student expectations about how they engage with education, with medical education. And it's not, I mean, I think all medical schools have experienced this, from what I understand. And most have now introduced some kind of attendance policy, not just to help with student engagement, but also to ensure we know where our students are and that they are safe and well.
So I think that's a good point. It's about making sure our students are safe and well, and their well-being is absolutely utmost for all of us. There's also another point in that we need to make sure we have competent doctors for the future, and part of that is about attending and making sure that they've been in those lectures, they understand, they can ask the questions, and most importantly the clinics, because you're not going to learn unless you're actually in that environment. So I know we were kind of talking more about lectures, but it's about ensuring that we've got competent doctors for the future as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And being in the clinical environments to have those experiences is something that we're really focusing on in terms of our attendance monitoring. And I think it's been about encouraging students back in more consistently, helping them to regain their confidence, because I think that sort of at that age group, early 20-year-olds, did have a particularly difficult experience during the pandemic, and I think expectations have changed for everybody. So it's about us kind of resetting, like you say, those boundaries to ensure we know everyone is getting what they need to become a competent, confident doctor. So I think we've just had to put more emphasis on making sure attendance is good to help them with that. But I think another consequence of the pandemic period is we've experienced an increased number of students going on intermission, which is basically when they take a year out of the course. And that might be to do with family circumstances or caring responsibilities, but it might also be to do with their own health. And there's been a rise in the number of students taking those intermissions. I think that is now kind of settling back down again.
Okay.
But we had kind of quite a lot of movement in the course in terms of students out and coming back into a later year, and obviously then experiencing bulges in numbers and reductions in numbers and pressure on placements. But it seems to be starting to settle now.
Okay. And I think that's really important. Like, you know, the bulging in numbers and things, there is a knock-on effect, and it's how do you manage that? Because everybody's training is important and they need to get those skills. So that is a really, really valid point. And I think also it's worth mentioning that there are strict rules about how much time out you can have. And in terms of graduating, you can only have so many years that you're studying. So I think that it's just worth kind of mentioning that.
You're supposed to complete the course within 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of the hard deadline, unless you have an exceptional reason.
And that's important just to recognize. But actually, from an administrative point of view, I could imagine that's a nightmare.
It can be really challenging to find those extra places on placement at times. But fortunately, I think partly because we have really good working relationships with the doctors that we're working with and all the trusts and all the specialties. And obviously they are engaged in medical education and want to produce this new generation of really good doctors. They find the space. We've been able to make it work.
That's so, brilliant. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. can I kind of link on to that, actually? Because you've talked about how important a relationship is. And I think it's really important to recognize. So here in England, we have the universities and we have our National Health Service. And so our hospitals are run by the National Health Services. But obviously our universities are training doctors, but we need the National Health Service to link. And I think that's really important to talk about. There are different organizations that are actually overseeing what happens in terms of that. But the relationship is really close and it is intertwined in terms of funding and everything else. But I think I'd like to pick up on how important those relationships are in terms of training our students.
Sure. Yeah, no, they're essential. As I mentioned, there's many clinical educators who are absolutely part of the course. And we have a sub-dean for curriculum, for example, who is a practicing clinician, but part of his time is spent on overseeing the curriculum. And that goes for all the areas that we work in. There's a clinical lead for all of those areas. So we obviously have really good working relationships with that close deanery team. But then we have, within each of the regional trusts we work with, there's a sub-dean who is a clinical lead in that hospital, but has some time dedicated for education. And we work really hard, myself and the dean work really hard to ensure that we've got good positive relationships with those leads, and also the education teams within those hospitals, who are administrators, professional services staff who deliver on the ground the actual teaching and look after the students who are there on placements. And although we have no kind of management oversight of those people, if you like, we've made it work through positive working relationships. And we have to ask them to do challenging things for us at times. For example, take more students, focus on a new bit of the curriculum, support students with welfare because they're actually living in those hospitals for the 6 to 8 weeks that they might be on placement with them. So we need them to support students as closely as we do when they're in Cambridge. Tried to build up really good working relationships with the professional services staff in those teams, but also the supporting doctors. So not just the dean, but also the sub-deans, but also the tutors who are medical educators who are working with them and delivering teaching, supervising them on placements. And so it comes back round to that they get involved in our away days. So that's kind of a reward, a thank you, an opportunity for them to come together and hear about what's happening in different placements. We also reach out to them regularly, and I run a sort of monthly meeting, a drop-in online for all of those trusts to come together. And that's administrators and clinicians who can just drop into that call, tell us what's happening in their trust, ask us any questions. And we might be saying, okay, so students are with you at the moment, they're coming towards the end of a block. We need to make sure all your end of placement assessments are in, just a reminder that they've got their exam revision week coming up. So we have that kind of dialogue with them just to remind them of what's going on in the course more generally, rather than just perhaps the placement they're on, so that they're aware of what students have going on beyond that particular placement.
And that's really important because I can imagine everybody gets in silos and this is what we do here. And it's like, yeah, absolutely what you do there is really important, but don't forget they're living in this bubble of, oh my goodness, I've got massive exam coming up and I just want to concentrate on that. So how do you pull them back in to say, no, this clinical placement is super important because. And it was also important for you to kind of highlight the fact that they're living in the accommodation that's on site at the hospital during a time. So again, students are being pulled away from perhaps their own accommodation that's in Cambridge or wherever that may be for placements. And that's a pull.
It is. Yeah, it is a pull. And I think that's one of the things that students find quite different, quite challenging about the courses that they go regularly for extended periods out to a placement. And it might be within the hospital trusts I've talked about, but they also spend fortnights throughout the course in GP placements, so in general practice. And that can be even further afield. So they might be in the far reaches of the region, and they have to obviously travel out, travel back. And when they're there, they stay over. So, yeah, it's quite it's quite a lot for students to kind of get their head around all of this different movement between placements, yeah. prioritising knowledge-based learning, and all the other kind of opportunities they have. And some of them do quite a lot of sport in Cambridge, you know, yes. which obviously is great for their well-being. But the later it gets in the course, the more of a tension that becomes in terms of their time. So
yeah, so yeah. it's important to how they balance as well, which yeah, absolutely. Is a life skill. Mm. We all have to balance
indeed,
way
yeah.
too much.
Well, I think it's preparing them for life as a doctor, really, having yeah. to balance all those different priorities.
So, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. So that's really important. Mm. Another point, which I'm not sure we've touched on, is the electives. And the reason I'm kind of bringing this up is we've already had a podcast about electives, and okay. that, but the administrative side mm. of electives falls within your team as
yeah,
well.
Sure.
So I think it's important to kind of highlight what that entails in terms
yeah,
of
sure. yeah.
students going in and out.
Yeah, so you talked about both
we did,
incoming and outgoing. Okay, yeah. So yes, there's a colleague within that deanery team who oversees electives exclusively. And that's quite a big job because obviously students coming in from all over the world, we have to kind of put them through a kind of selection process, if you like, and get them then into the different placements within Cambridge, which works well, but it's quite a kind of intense process that goes on throughout the year. Mm. And at the same time, our year students between year five and year six go on a 7-week elective that they self-manage. They decide what they're going to do, but we have to do within the team, we do all of the kind of risk assessments around that, all the paperwork around it, or the approval of it, making sure it's an appropriate kind of elective.
Yeah.
And some of those electives are within Cambridge. Students don't have to go anywhere. They can do whatever they like, but a fair few, probably 50% at least, go overseas.
Right, so there's a lot to do.
Yeah, there's a lot to do.
So, gosh, I mean, all the different aspects that you've talked about does seem an awful lot. How many people are in your team? So we've talked about all these different facets.
Yeah.
So
it's about 20, I think, in total. So each of the administrative teams I've talked about have 4 or 5 people within each team.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's about 20. And I think a key thing that actually is starting to make managing all of that a bit easier are the fact that we're moving to more kind of systems to support what we do.
Okay.
Obviously, it's been IT-based for a long time, but we're now moving kind of to more sophisticated pieces of software, like timetabling okay. software, hopefully some scheduling software to help with the complex scheduling that goes on. Assessment is now moving to being digital assessment. So sort of over the past 5 years, really, we're making that transition into bespoke systems that are used, you know, across other medical schools, other universities to run those kind of processes, which is making it all more manageable.
Well, that's good. I mean, it sounds, you know, in this age, we should be doing more
yeah,
of that.
Absolutely.
But it's as you're linking to all of those, some systems, sometimes you start them and think, oh, that's not quite right. What else could we do? And of course, we also have the national assessment that
yeah.
has been introduced as well. So there's been all that
yes.
Transition as well. So yeah there's
yeah.
a lot to get into place. But
oh, there is. No, that's the medical licensing assessment, which is taken now by everyone who's going to be qualifying as a doctor in the UK. And actually, it was quite a proud moment this year for when our final year students did their final written exams, and they were all digital. And I remember there was a moment of thinking, oh, that's great. Actually,
yeah.
we're up and running and everything is now digital. So that was, yeah, it's taken a long time to get there, but it's been really successful.
We're and that's
in a good
brilliant.
Place with that, and it's great.
Yeah that's yeah, brilliant yeah. to hear, and that kind of sigh of relief.
Yes, big hurdle, yeah.
That's
so,
good.
Yeah.
So I think people who might be listening to this podcast might be wanting to start a medical school or rethink how they're running, some of the practicalities, things like that. Do you have any top tips that you would say for somebody
yeah.
in terms of your role
sure.
and what you do?
I think a key thing is to ensure you've got engaged clinicians and professional services staff who will all see themselves as part of one team, working on, you know, the outcomes of producing good medical students, and that you have a really good dialogue, a really good understanding between those two groups of people. And that as far as you can be, you feel like a single team trying to deliver what the outputs you're working towards. I think systems are key. I think increasingly, you know, well, everything is expected to be digital, and that's the only way to manage the volume of information that you're dealing with. I think those two things for me.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you. Alison, it's been wonderful having you with us today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and giving us that opportunity to just learn a bit more about your complex role. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks, Cheryl. It's been a pleasure.
If listeners are interested in learning more, please contact us via the QMEG website. You will also find our previous podcasts on the website at www.cumeg.cim.ac.uk, or look for us wherever you get your podcasts. We are grateful to you, our listeners. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to us today. If you'd like to hear more from this and our next series or any of our previous podcasts, please like and subscribe to our podcast. Until next time, I'm your host, Cheryl France. Thank you again for listening.